The eye of the hurricane that hit Galveston 100 years ago today passed just south of the city, and the storm was over by dawn on September 9th. John Burnett picks up the story in the aftermath of the storm, as it is remembered by those who survived it.
About daylight, the storm began to subside, the waters to recede. As the light came, a call from outside brought help from the house, and in shocked silence they saw standing, stripped stark naked except for a piece of mattress ticking, their neighbor from across the street, Captain Munn. His home, his wife, and her mother were all gone. He had floated all night on a mattress, and so was saved. As friendly, sympathetic hands drew him into shelter, tears rained down his face, and there are no words to describe his desolation.
The hurricane destroyed two-thirds of Texas's most advanced city and badly damaged what was left. The neighborhoods closest to the Gulf were simply obliterated. Galveston was unrecognizable. The only way one woman found her ruined house was hearing her pet parrot calling, "Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly," from the attic. James Brown, who'd immigrated from England to Texas in 1883, wrote this letter home as soon as he could.
"Dear sisters and cousins, we are all well and alive, thank God. I would like to describe the awful tornado and flood, but words cannot describe it. Perhaps you have read accounts of it and seen pictures of the wrecks, but if you put them all together and multiply the awfulness of it by 10, you will still have but a faint idea of it all. Human thought cannot grasp it. Your affectionate brother, James Brown."
John W. Harris and Catherine Vetter Pauls never forgot watching how the storm affected their respective parents.
The old Harris homestead, where my aunts and my cousins lived, was completely destroyed, and I lost 11 relatives in the 1900 storm. And I remember the mayor came in next morning, and when we were all having breakfast there at 1404 Tremont, and he said to Father John, "Your whole family are destroyed." And I remember it's the first time that I ever saw Father with tears in his eyes. And he had no idea that of the extent of the damage. We hadn't left the house yet.
My mother carried in her hand her jewelry in a small chamois bag, and once she stepped on a barrel concealed by the water. It rolled, and she went under with it. She grabbed at something to pull herself up. It was the body of a small girl. Her self-control gave way, and she wept hysterically.
To read the letters of survivors, it seems miraculous that anyone made it through the night. Ella Seeley belonged to one of Galveston's leading families.
"Dear Margaret, oh, you can't imagine the awful tales we hear. One man's head was cut right off his body by a piece of flying slate. Telegraph poles were flying in the air like straws, and trees were falling everywhere. Old man Murdoch was washed out to sea in his bathing house, which collapsed. He grabbed a piece of wood and was blown into shore and dashed against a house, climbed in the second window, and that house was carried out in the Gulf and smashed to pieces. He grabbed onto a section of roof and again blown to shore. Next morning was found amidst debris with both arms broken. Your loving sister, Ella."
The day after the storm, one survivor described knots of people frightened out of their wits, crazy men and women crying and weeping at the tops of their voices. Searchers found the nuns and the children of St. Mary's Orphanage still tethered together, and they buried them where they lay. There were corpses everywhere. Louise Bristol Hopkins remembers how the authorities tried sea burial, but they were unsuccessful. She was 7 during the storm. She later recounted her experiences for school children.
"There was no identification or no prayer said or anything else. They just were put in the ground. And then there were so many of them, they took them out to sea, and then they washed back in again. So then they had to be burned. It was a terrible time, it really was.
Yeah.
I heard the stories of people who had been, women with long hair, had been caught in the trees with the hair and cut to pieces with slate that had been found."
The authorities declared martial law and began conscripting men to restore order and to shoot the ghouls, they called them, that were robbing jewelry from corpses. Lloyd Failing was deputized to oversee the disposal of bodies.
We drove hundreds of Negroes at the bayonet point to assist in the work of burning and loading the dead on barges for sea burial. And on one occasion, by orders of the mayor, we marched to the foot of Tremont Street, taking every able-bodied man white or black met with, and forced them at bayonet point to assist in the awful work. These poor fellows were only kept up on whiskey, which was given to them by the gobletful. Major Lloyd R. D. Failing.
The role of race in the 1900 storm is complicated. Isola Collins, a retired music teacher, has collected stories of how black Galveston weathered the hurricane. She told me of a white woman who refused to be saved by a black man, and of how African Americans were given relief supplies only after whites got theirs. But Mrs. Collins said that was not the whole picture, and she insisted I include this story told by her Aunt Annie.
This white man was crying, and he told my husband, "If your house is gone, you bring your family and come on and live in mine with us." And so we stayed there. These white people just turned their place over to them.
In the decade after the storm, Galveston rebuilt itself in a burst of civic determination. The city constructed a 17-foot seawall and a cement causeway to the mainland. Every surviving structure, from shanties to St. Patrick's Catholic Church, was jacked up and sand pumped underneath it. 500 city blocks were elevated this way. Today, there's almost nothing in Galveston to remind people of the hurricane. They say there are still houses with holes chopped in the floors and buildings with high water marks, but no one can find them. On this centennial, the only concrete thing we have left to remind us of that time are the voices from the great storm. I'm John Burnett on Galveston Island, Texas.
I tell you all, thank God I got it. I'm telling you the truth. And no tongue can tell what that was.
Lost and Found Sound executive producers are the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, and Jay Allison. Production help came from Sarah Saracen, Bill Deputy, and Jim McKee at Earwax Productions.
Thanks to Galveston and Texas History Center of the Rosenberg Library and archivists Casey Green and Shelley Henley Kelly, who are authors of the book Through a Night of Horrors. Thanks also to the Strand Theater, the Center for American History at the University of Texas at Austin, and the students of Alamo Elementary School, Burnett Elementary School, and the L.A. Moran Academy of Fine Arts.